Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I'll be your host this evening. I'll be your temporary host because the regular host is having a little bit of trouble connecting with the show. But she says that she can hear the show as far as the music goes and maybe even see the show, but she can't log in as the host. So we'll see how we're going to handle this. But in any case, we do have a show to offer you. Our show tonight is a call-in discussion show with survivor professionals, that means all of you, who are going to be using an open mic forum. We'll feature survivor professionals who field topics, including some of which are brought to the episode by you, the listener. If you call in, you can add a topic to the discussion. Tonight, those who call in will form our panel. On these episodes, we welcome various co-hosts, survivor professionals, who assist in fielding questions and leading a variety of topics suggested by our call-in participants. The trauma-informed perspective of survivor professionals will help them guide the discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from the questions and topics brought to us by you, our listeners. Everyone's invited to engage on tonight's show. And I do have a pretty healthy panel here tonight. I have, Phil from California first. Let me say hi to Phil. Phil, how you doing?
Hanging in there, buddy. How are you?
All right. Good to see you there. Let me go through the rest. There's four more. Wow, this is a good panel. The next is Kim Lakin. She's from Colorado. And she's, of course, a welcome addition to any show. Kim, thank you for being here tonight.
Can you hear me?
Kim? Now I can.
I'm going in and out, too. No, I was out at my daughter, who's an hour and a half away from where I live normally. Dad is. And I have to go. So I'm driving down there. So I was going to get on the show at my daughter's house, but I had to get in my car to go get my dad. So I'm on the road right now, so I could sit on for a few minutes and be a part of the show. Thank you for taking over for me. Sorry it was such last minute.
Nah, you're doing fine. Kim will come back to us. If I understand it, she's the designated host tonight, or co-host tonight, but she'll call in, or she'll participate as much as she can, and when she's comfortable, Kim, go ahead and let me know when that happens. If and when that happens, we'll let you take over the hosting, and in the meantime, I'll be the substitute host. How's that sound?
Now, you go ahead, because I might have to get off early to get my dad into the car.
No problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Next, we have Nancy.
Well, thank you.
From Georgia. You're welcome. Nancy from Georgia, who's calling in, and it's always a pleasure to have her on the show, too. Nancy, welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now episode.
Hello, good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me. Hello, Miss Kim and Phil. So good to hear you. Thank you for having me, Mr. Bill. Good evening to everyone.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. We're gonna, we're gonna have a general discussion show in a second. So think about everybody that I'm bringing on. Think about a topic you'd like to hear discussed. And don't worry if you're not the first topic. We'll probably get to two or three topics throughout the show. Now I have somebody from the 818 area code, and I'm not sure who this is. I tried to look it up. That I believe is Louisiana, but I can't seem to locate anybody from that number that generally has called in before. So let me just find out. I'm opening the 818 area code phone number. Hi there, this is Bill Murray. Who's this and where are you from?
Hey, Bill, this is Sheila. My name is Sheila. I'm a friend of John Anderson's.
Sheila, huh?
Sheila, that's right.
Sheila. And so you're in Louisiana then.
I am. Yes,
well, we won't hold it against you that you're a friend of John Anderson's. We'll try not to.
Okay.
Okay. I'll let other people that call in know, too. Don't, get off her back. Now, she can't help it. She's a friend of John Anderson's.
He's right. A pretty good fella.
Okay. We'll be right back to you. And we have one more person to introduce as part of the panel. This is a 931 area code number. 931, this is Bill Murray. Who is this and where are you from? Oh, I need to open your mic. I'm sorry. There we go.
I'm Darlene Clark
from Tennessee. Darlene?
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Oh, great. I'm so glad. Tennessee. Wow.
I said, yep, I'm here.
Yeah. I know Darlene quite well, and she's been a really good participant at NASCA and a volunteer. But we haven't seen a lot of you on these shows, Darlene, so I'm delighted that you called in tonight. I want to start seeing more of you, all right? And I really appreciate you calling in this evening, all right? All
right,
so that's the panel. We have Phil, Kim, Sheila, Nancy, and Darlene. And of course, my name is Bill Murray. I'll be the host, I guess, tonight, unless Kim wants to take it over at any point, which is fine with me. This is Stop Child Abuse Now, 2943. Let me just say to begin, we have another 650-something shows or more that were done under the name of Community Matters. So actually, we've done 3,500 of these shows, and that's no small thing. A lot of you have been here over and over and over, and some have even been here since the very beginning. I'm thinking now, for example, Carol, who's not here tonight. But, there are people that have been here from the very, very beginning, and they show up and they don't, and they really still participate after all these years. I think about 13 years, something like that is right. But anyway, tonight's show has become a call-in discussion show because that's what we're doing now when we can't get enough special guests. We just substitute this format we're using tonight. And when we have a nice panel like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of you and one of me, 6 people, that's great because, there's lots of opportunity then for different positions and perspectives to be included. But we want you guys to consider yourself the survivor professionals, which you certainly are, who will field topics that will be brought to this episode by the people who call in, form a panel, the listener. So please, let me just let you know that the phone number to call is 646-595-2118. Again, 646-595-2118. And we would be happy to have anybody call in that wants to participate. And don't forget, that number is the same number we use every night. So if you write it down somewhere or put it in your phone, you'll never have to look it up. Just hit the phone. You can even butt dial this show if you want. It's up to you. Oh, all right. we are going to start with just an open invitation for anyone to bring up a topic that perhaps they've had on their mind and would like to hear talked about. Sheila, you're new here. Would you have something? It can be anybody.
Sure. I've been on Shadows with John before, here and there. I just started telling my story and my siblings at the end or around November 2021. We all three were sexually abused in some form, associated with a apostolic Pentecostal church. Very traumatic. I found out in the summer of 2021 by the granddaughter of our old pastor that it's still happening in that church. So I knew then that I had to do something. I'm now 44 years old. I've lived with this since I was a 9-year-old girl. My abuse alone, one of my brothers I lost when I was a 17-year-old girl. He was 23. He turned to drugs, any drugs you can name or possibly think of to try to drown out the pain. And he acquired HIV, and we lost him at the age of 23 in 1995 of AIDS.
Wow.
So when I found out it's still happening, I started speaking out. I made a report with Louisiana State Police. We have an active investigation. Exposure is my main goal right now. I would like to say yesterday, the organization that governs these churches, it's called the UPCI, United Pentecostal Church International. They put out a statement yesterday that was just absolutely disgusting. Anybody can go to their any of their social media pages and look at it, but they are trying to cover their own behinds, I could say, I guess. But they put a statement and put generalized abuse. And they have all these people, some, you know, that survivors, but some saying, oh, we're so glad you did this. There was one individual that spoke about her abuse from her grown husband, and she was, you know, advised by the pastor to stay in the relationship, but they completely avoided the actual pandemic within this organization of child sex abuse and being covered up by pastors and letting it be allowed. And so I've spent my last 2 days voicing my opinion on their websites, on their social media pages. I'm to the point I don't care anymore. They're fixing to get exposed, whatever it takes, because it's got to be stopped.
Let's have some of the people that are on the show tonight speak to you on this topic. There's a lot of topics here, but the basic topic is there's someone, a predator out there, who you're identifying that's part of a church group, and they are in denial about needing to take any action against this person who is a child predator. So let's open it up to the panel and see if they'd like to share anything about this subject. Anybody?
Okay.
Yeah. Is that someone trying to talk?
Hey. Hi, this is Darlene.
Hi.
I know that that's a predecessor where a lot of people covered up. And I was also, like I told you, how one of the preachers, the church I went to, where he pushed me on the desk and he asked, "Where do you want it? Where do you want it?" I said, I don't want it. I don't want your, I don't want it, And he was married, and I was married. And then when he finally let me up and I ran and got in my car, and he came to my car trying to knock on my glass, trying to get me to talk with him. But instead, I knew where he was going. He left and went to the elder's house. So there was a great division there, and luckily I was able to have enough energy to go to the nearest house from the church from where I was, and it happened to be a lady friend of mine. So I went up there, and she calmed me down, and she seen what had happened, and she knew that And the elder said something to the effect that he wasn't trying to do that. He's trying to keep you from killing yourself. I'm like, what? And so then, because I went ahead and told, oh, he would not do that kind of thing, and it's kind of freaky that a couple of weeks later he found it was found out that he did have an affair on his wife.
Okay, so
I guess
that is. Yeah, let me ask you if you could clarify for me, because I'm a little bit confused. Are you talking about the same case and the same religious group?
No, I'm talking about this was a different religious group. It just goes to show that a lot of people from the different churches, that this keeps happening on throughout, you know?
You're absolutely right. Okay, well, that's a great comment. Thank you very much. This is not, you know, Sheila, something that's particular to your group. It happens all over. And it happens in almost any group. It could be a religious group, but it can happen in a school. It can happen at a summer camp. It can happen at a soccer coach. You know, it can happen anywhere. And it does happen everywhere. Boy Scouts, right? We've heard some of these stories. But some places, like religious groups, seem to be a place where children are more susceptible simply because, frankly, the religious group asks us to have faith in them, right? We are supposed to be a part of the group, maybe the community. I certainly was. And they find it very easy to take advantage of children amongst them that are you know, originally not, you know, very faithful, and then are confused once the molestation occurs. I certainly was. I'm one of those people, too. But,
yeah, it comes with a lot of the grooming that they do, and they make sure that the kids are too afraid to tell, and when they do tell, the kids end up getting reprimanded and called a liar and all this other kind of stuff.
Right, right. So, Sheila, the point is that, you know, your story is important to tell, but we all have recognized it because we've heard it before. We've heard it in all kinds of groups. In fact, we used to do a show once every 3 weeks or something. It was called institutional abuse, and that was something we could relate to many different groups that were official organizations of one or the other, and most people who are looking from the outside expect those groups to be above board. And, of course, when they're not, it's hard for us to believe it as community members because they're supposed to have the reputation of being fine people. You know, religious people are fine people. You know, Boy Scout masters are fine people. You know what I mean? So it's hard for us to accept when children who are being abused come forward, or when young adults or little older adults decide finally to come forward. And by the way, keeping the secret, which is one of the things you mentioned, is also a hallmark of child abuse. Almost all of us, many of us anyway, have come into adulthood keeping the secret and not wanting to speak about it. And now we know, as probably you do, Sheila, that the worst thing we can do is be quiet, and the best thing we can do is share the secret, share the information, and make sure that everybody has an opportunity to, you know, learn from our story. So that's a part of what we do.
Right.
Nancy, go ahead. Please go ahead.
When you talk about keeping the secret, my husband and I are going to be married 26 years in August, and we were married for at least 5 years before I told him because of
right.
the loyalty that he had to that pastor. I had to make sure that I had him away from that place before I could ever tell him about my abuse. So, and up until last summer when we found out about these new cases, my husband still had no fault of his own. That's just what we were taught there. I recently painfully watched a video of him in another church instructing that church to obey their pastor and not to question anything that come across that pulpit. He said, if this pastor tells you something and comes across this pulpit, you don't question, you listen and you obey. So that's what we were taught to do. With my case, he told my mother, I was 9 years old, he told my mother, if you will, please allow me to handle it to keep confusion and division down amongst the families of the church. And nothing was ever done. And he's still covering up to this day. He's 80 years old. He is still very much in control of that church, even though his son-in-law is supposed to be pastor of it. It's just absolutely disgusting. And, you know, when you have brain control and mind control over the adults and they will listen, I look at it as a cult. It's very much so a cult. And something's got to change because there's more children over there that's in danger.
One thing we have to change, and let me just, since you just said it, you know, one thing we have to change is we have to teach our children that they should speak up. And if we're not doing that from the youngest age, then we are, you know, we are leaving the opportunity, possibly leaving the opportunity for them to speak up as soon as they can behind. And that's really important in this. You have to speak up as quickly as possible and tell the right person. And if the right person doesn't get it, you tell the next right person and then the next one until you finally are heard. Because the first person, unfortunately, that you tell because you think that they are legitimate and so forth may not be. And when that happens, you know, it's another opportunity for the community of abusers to take advantage of you. Right?
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else want to talk on this topic? Bill, you haven't said anything yet.
Well, I enjoy those things for the most part.
What did you say?
I enjoy listening for the most part.
You enjoyed it?
Just like listening.
Good.
Yeah.
Hi,
okay, I'm
going to
say something. Oh, Miss Kim, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say that I felt that I had to be taken out of my church that I was at for 25 years because of a lot of these reasons, because nobody would listen to me. I had been in children's ministry for 25 years with my kids, and then I became a part of the staff after my kids were grown, and I tried to, I mean, I was talking to the head pastor. There's nobody else that I could go to besides him, and he is so closed-minded and just focused on what he is doing that it was not open for discussion ever, keeping the kids safe. And there were very many, I mean, this was even before I started doing this work publicly and told my story publicly, but I was trying to, you know, just with from what I knew, I was like, the kids should not be stuck in the basement and then everybody should not be going through the kids' main room, you know. And so, but he wouldn't listen to me. So I think that, like everybody is saying, it's, unfortunately, the churches are the hardest ones to get through because that was where my heart was when I started teaching, was I wanted to get to the churches. And I'm finding that the only time that they will let me come in and teach is after something has happened, after an incident has happened. And it breaks my heart because that's not what prevention is about, you know. Prevention is about getting ahead of the problem. So, yeah, everybody is kind of just closed-minded. As a matter of fact, that the head pastor left that church, and I was talking with the new children's minister a couple of years ago to come in and teach, and she kept just putting me off. She's like, and even this year, I said, can I come in before Vacation Bible School? And I never got anything back. It's so hard. They're the hardest people to get through, too, for some reason, and we shouldn't. Like Bill said, we need to change that. That needs to change. They should be number one.
They should be number one, but they are, unfortunately, predators are all over the world, okay, and they're all over our neighborhoods. They're all over our country, in every neighborhood, and probably on every street in every community. There are predators, And then institutions, certain kinds of institutions, attract predators to them because they're places where it's more likely that children are going to be available for them, and that's their appetite, is children. I mean, for example, a summer camp or a school or a church, anywhere that children gather, there will be predators there, and they will be actually drawn to it, and they'll hide in plain sight. And that's why people don't believe it when you bring up somebody's name or an incident. They think that they're above reproach. Oh, he's been here for 12 years. We've never had any problem, and so forth. And that's just not true. You know, you can have they're very clever, let's put it this way, about hiding in plain sight, about presenting the side of them that they think would be acceptable to regular community members, while at the same time having inside of them this disease, really, this illness, this, you know, problem of having sex with kids, or, you know, and of wanting to have sex with kids, and you don't get over it. That's another thing people should know. You don't get over it. If you are a predator, you're probably going to be a predator all your life. We try constantly, Sheila, to find ways to correct that by different kinds of therapies and so forth, and even medicines and procedures. And the community that does that has never found anything that's significantly effective. Occasionally, there'll be something that works for a little while, and then it doesn't. But basically, if you are a predator, pedophile-type predator, and you've already crossed that line into your pedophilia, it won't go away. It'll continue to fester. And this is why we try to work hard with people who are even incarcerated because they are caught, but that doesn't help. Because as soon as they're let out, they go right back to the same kind of behavior and with impunity. And again, they're very clever, so they can hide in plain sight. Let's see, who did I hear trying to say something just then? Was it Nancy?
Yes. I was basically in agreement with you, the importance of speaking up. Predators love to manipulate their victims, and they love to tell you not to tell, keep a little secret. They befriend you, they groom you, they gain your trust, and they make you, you know, build a relationship, a bond, and, you know, or care for them, love for them sometimes. And then it makes it harder because you feel guilty, you feel, you know, you feel committed to that person. You have a bond, you have a relationship. And so, you know, it's very difficult when that's being done to a child, because a lot of us parents, we have a hard time speaking to our kids about abuse. We don't want to introduce it to them if they're not even thinking about it, even though that's not the right way to go nowadays. But this is just the normal way of thinking. When you have a little kid, you see them playing with the dollies with their two little pigtails, and they're so cute. Like, it's so difficult sometimes to have these conversations. And just like Ms. Kim said, that's why it's so important to do the trainings early so you can learn how to introduce the conversations in a way where it's not too much. Because if you don't know, you can't say too much. But if you get trained and you get educated, you learn, okay, speak like this, speak like that. It's education. It's not crossing the line, like calling your private parts what their name is. You know, your breast, your vagina, your penis, you know, those things, we're not comfortable doing that because we don't do that. We say pee-pee, you know, we say all kinds of words to substitute. And so common to do that because I've done it. So I can understand and I can relate. But, you know, it is important to do that. Ms. Carol says that a lot, and it's so true that it's important to call the private parts by what they are. And these are things you learn when you go get trainings and when you get educated. And it's not to say, you know, it's not to be condescending. When we get educated, we find out more information, and it makes us stronger. And that's our job, to sharpen each other, you know. A lot going on out here, and we all need to wake up.
The ones that have an emotional problem when you bring this topic up are not the kids. It's us. us adults. The child needs this education and soaks it up. And if
they
mommy and daddy is trying to educate them, they just take it all in. For example, on the topic of the names of body parts, that should be done as soon as they're starting to talk.
Yeah.
And then it just is something they've learned. And they don't know any different between, their ankle and their penis. It's just a body part name.
But if you grow up not hearing your parents call it that, it's like I always say, if I teach you that this cup is called a tree, you're going to call it a tree your whole life until you hear something else. And then everybody's like, what are you talking about? It's this. It's a cup, until other people bring awareness. The child's only going to be used to calling it what they're taught as young children. So back in the days, we didn't have intervention and awareness and education on these topics. So a lot of us, like I didn't grow up calling it those names. We called it other names because in my country, we used a lot of sweet names to cover up. So culturally, that really was out of the norm. But a lot of people that I know, they don't call it that. They call it different names. And so we have to educate the public, like, look, sexual child abuse is happening every day. These are the statistics, which I'm sorry, y'all, I didn't pull up the statistics, but not the statistics are not even correct because most child abuse, the most sexual abuse, most abuse is not even reported, a lot of abuse is not reported. So we don't even have the full stats. We just have something to work with. But when you start to hear the stats and you start to see the crimes, I don't watch TV, so I miss a lot of the news, right? But people who are, my mother watches CNN every day, all day long, okay? That CNN lady right there. And so she knows everything that's going on. She's like, oh, my God, you got to pay attention. You missed this. You missed that. I'm like, look, I got a lot of pressure, a lot of other things going on. I can't. But it is important for us to educate ourselves. Now that we have the resources and the wonderful organizations like NASCA, we are able to come in the room. That's why we put out the invitation that tonight we're on the radio so that people who want to learn how they can better protect their children or our youth or our community or themselves, they can come in here in this room and they can leave equipped with information and education. And that's why it's important that we talk and that we're open to learn.
Well, that's very true. This is all under the category, and somebody mentioned it before, but it's worth talking about, of what we call prevention. See, there are three pieces to solving the problem that we have. First one is prevention, and the second one is intervention, and the third one is recovery. Well, prevention and intervention are things that we do for children, but we first have to be taught what they are and how to do them ourselves. And a lot of us, in the process of being taught, realize that we've never really understood these topics. Intervention is very important because children will not, for the most part, report things that on themselves. So they have to be drawn out, frankly. Their information has to be solicited by someone who knows what they're doing often. But the point is that the first thing you have to do is teach the parents about this, and so that if they have a suspicion that a child is being abused, what do you do with that information? You turn it into authorities and different things. So that's all intervention. And prevention is teaching the child, the things we're talking about tonight. So there's a lot of work to do before recovery, and then recovery is a huge topic as well. So those three things are very important for survivors to learn about. Let's see. Darlene, we haven't talked in a while. How about you? Is Darlene there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. It's like there's all of a sudden a couple of pop-ups that was popping up. I had to get them out of the way.
Okay.
Yeah,
no
some
problem.
Of the channels I'm following. But I agree with everything that – who was that just got there speaking?
Miss Nancy. How are you?
Nancy. Yes, I agree with a lot that you were saying because there's it's underreported, and like with our cases, did you know that I was looking at stop as a prevention about against sexual abuse, also a website,
mm-hmm.
and they were saying that 85% of adults says claims that their sexual abuse and their abuse was not reported. They never reported it. And so with the numbers already still being a significant amount, that's just of the people that was reported, can you imagine how much higher that rate of the sexual abuse and the abuse is actually staggeringly?
Oh,
you know, 85% of the adults
right.
say they did not even report.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we have learned that the majority don't report. You know, the majority keep it quiet. In fact, the vast majority keep it quiet, you know. And so to bring out somebody's story, because that's what we have an impetus to do as children. We may be taught to do it, told to do it, but even if we're not told to do it, we are ourselves so injured and so feel so low self-esteem and so forth, that we won't bring it up. We don't want people to know that we this happened to us, so we don't bring it up. And that's the main thing that that people will do. And that means that later on, hopefully, they will hear one of these shows, for example, or hear somebody telling their story, or maybe read a website or a book, and they will see in the words that they are identifying, and that it's okay. In fact, it's imperative to speak up yourself. And as soon as they do, Darlene, as you know, we're there to help them. But they think that they're never going to have another friend. You know, that's how we feel. And it's not them; it's us. I'm one of them too.
Matter of fact, you're the first website that I actually, as far as sharing my story outside of a support group, years and years and years ago, for dissociation.
Right.
And stuff, but yours actually was the first one that I started sharing my story with.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
yeah.
Now look at me. I got my second book published now.
I know. We can't keep you quiet now.
I know. I know, right? I just created a new YouTube Live where I started telling my story on there and answering questions about different things and getting down to the nitty-gritty of some of the things.
Right, right.
And I want to thank my friend Sheila for being there for me, too, during this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, that was a very good comment, I think. You know, and it is pertinent to this discussion that we bring up statistics and we bring up, you know, we're not all abused in the same way. But our experience is that we react in a similar way to any kind of abuse that's had. So all the children that are out there understand, or the adult survivors now, understand that you may not identify with the facts of somebody's story, but if you listen carefully, you are going to identify with the feelings that they express as they tell their stories. That's what you try to identify with, because the feelings are pretty much universal. And we want people to get over the hump of that, to get over the impetus to stop. You know, stop. We want them to be willing to talk too. That's what you get when you listen to some of these shows. You hear many people telling their story, and someday we hope, it might give you the courage to tell your story, because we take care of each other. And all these people that are talking tonight are not going to let anything happen to the next person in the panel. We are a family, and we call ourselves the NASCA family because that's how we try to operate, with support and understanding and assistance. Okay? So let's see. Who else would like to make a comment here? This is great. We're doing fine. And we have John Anderson joining us, too. Hi, John.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'm sorry, I'm a little late getting on. I was on the road, but I wanted to be here tonight. So I hope everybody's doing fine. But I was glad to see a nice panel, too. Nice panel.
Yeah,
excellent.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Nice big panel. I'm really pleased.
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to listen to what y'all are talking about so far. So, if there's a topic y'all are on, I'll join in as soon as I'll understand.
Mm-hmm. Let's let one or two of the current participants that are here already share again, and then it's after you jump in, of course, anytime you want. But we are talking, we do have some topics going, and then we've expanded as we've talked, too. Right now we're talking about the fact that, prevention and intervention are kind of what we have to do for our kids. They're kid things. We have to teach that, and we have to teach that to ourselves to begin with. And that recovery, which we're really not discussing yet tonight, are topics and tools that come as a third step, but if you don't do prevention well and you don't do intervention well, you're probably just keeping your mouth shut and not willing to share anything.
Well, you
anything.
Just hit it right on the head.
Yep.
About awareness. Yep. You hit it right on the head. Awareness is the key.
Right. That's right. Well, you want to explain
that?
Yeah,
and I was going to say, sorry. No. This is Kim.
Hey, Kim. You okay?
Hey. Yeah, I'm in the car right now. I'm driving. So
right.
I was just going to say, I think one of the things that we teach in the classes is that you really shouldn't call the police. You should call somebody who works with kids, who is in the child advocacy center or something like that, just because you can traumatize the child even more. And I wanted to throw that in there because we're kind of talking about all of this.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Because, we don't want the child to have to be interviewed 10 times and re-traumatized. And if you call a child advocacy center right away, they will get in touch with the police, and they will make sure that they get their report. But they know how to talk to a child, and so that's just something to keep in mind, too, is, to have something.
That's
have
a very good point.
And that's what I pass out every class that I do is a sheet that has, in Colorado, all the children's advocacy centers and, in all of the different counties and cities in Colorado. So that's. Yeah,
well, Kim, I tell you, that's a great point. And I do agree with everything you're saying. And I just want to bring up another fact, which you're hitting on there, is that, just recently we had, a couple of guests on the show that emphasized that exact same thing, okay, is that making decisions on a situation – you have to really put your mind in the place of thinking about the child, right? About the trauma that can be imposed, onto that. And, I think one of the guests, it was Hank McGrath, Let me tell you something. That guy, he's exactly what you're saying. And it's a true thing. When you work with people that have been through it, number one, and understand what it is, that child, okay, those eyes, those ears, they're listening and watching to every single thing that's happening, okay? So the impact on the trauma side can be very extensive, as not only as the child or the victim himself, but also friends of the child, family members, people that know. So this will impact him or her for the rest of their life, So it's a very good point, and how to handle it is a very touchy situation. I know that there's another panel member here, Sheila is on here. She can testify to all of that. Almost everyone that's on this panel, I see, And it's very important that we discuss it because it's one of the major steps, okay, of getting in to the one thing that NASCA does, and that is going on from there and helping out, with the healing process, right? So you don't want to, you know, make this an impact load initially if you can prevent it, right? So it's how you handle a situation, and I totally agree with that. That's a very good topic.
Yeah, it is a good topic. Anybody else want to make a contribution to it?
And I'm glad that Sheila's here tonight to give her to ask the question.
Yeah, me too.
Sheila, would you like to ask that question again so maybe John could answer that?
You'll have to remind me, Darlene, what question it was.
You were talking about the church and
I wanted to kind of emphasize on what Ken said about not going to the authorities first. And this is my reasoning. Yes, it can traumatize a child, but I had a fellow member. He was an adult, and I was a 9-year-old girl. He was married with a wife and children. But he was a police officer for one of our parishes here in Louisiana. And I found out around maybe January or February, I spoke to my abuser's ex-wife. That police officer helped cover up my abuse along with the pastor. So I have major trust issues with the police department now. So I do agree, you know, it would be better to go to a child advocate center if you do find out that something's happening to your child or a child that you love instead of going to the police, because oftentimes they can be intertwined with, and I'm not saying it's like this everywhere. This is just my personal experience. They're intertwined with some of these churches or pastors, and it can be covered very easily. The man that raped my brother that passed away, he has a case on file. I have the certified copies from the clerk of court's office from 1994 where he raped another 12-year-old boy. I still do not know who that 12-year-old boy is. So that was dismissed. And back then, our pastor was the head clergy, or whatever you call it, over the correctional center in this parish. So I do agree. I don't think you should go directly to the police. Find a child advocacy center. I have come a long way since the summer of 2021. Yeah. You can ask John. I, at first, was scared to death to talk. I'm in the process of being interviewed by a investigative journalist, so this thing is destined to be exposed.
Let me explain that a child advocacy center, if you have one, is probably the best place to go to, as you say. But unfortunately, they're not available everywhere. However, you should look for that right away. And the other thing is, as you did mention, it's not fair to paint with a single brush all police departments or all DHS or what, you know. It is fair to say that an awful lot of them, you know, that's fair to say. An awful lot of them will not take your case seriously. And that's disgusting.
Hey, Bill.
You know, go ahead.
Hey, Bill. I want to say that Victoria's on hold, too.
Oh, she is? Well, let's bring her in.
Yeah, she didn't text me until you got whoever's there to bring her in.
I got it. Hello, Victoria.
Hey there. How you doing?
Very well. We have a discussion going on, so if you'd be a little patient and catch up with us, we'd appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
Right?
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
All right. So who was next? Did I step on somebody just
well,
then?
Actually, I wanted to comment on Sheila's situation, you know, because it's very important to know that I've been a part of this, you know, from the beginning, okay? And when you go to somebody that knows how to handle it, okay, and that's been through it, I think it's the best step to do it at this point, only because of the movement that's happened since, say, 2017 to the present. We now have very experienced people in line ready to go and help people take the right steps, okay? And traumatizing children, to me, is the worst thing that can ever happen. And by doing so in the wrong way, like she brought up, it's absolutely crucial that these steps are taken in the right manner, not only for a victim of age now. When I say that, I mean, you know, limitations can come into play, okay? So you have a lot to work with now in the state of Louisiana and other states now. I know that Pennsylvania is going to be January. You know, amendments are being added on. If not abolished, that's what I'm fighting for. You know, it's all abolished, you know, with this. So it all depends on situations, but it has to be handled in the right manner. That's the whole key. And getting the police involved at some point, it's going to happen. It's going to have to happen because of records, you know, it needs to be, you know, put on, you know, on every part of the step. But how do you get there? You know, how do you take that first step? To me, that's the most crucial thing. And turning back to a organization that started this, in other words, if there was a pedophile that was working for a particular organization, whether it be any church, it doesn't matter if it's the, you know, girl, Boy Scouts, it does not matter. Do not go to them, okay? At some point, that'll happen, you know, but you have to let that course happen in its right way. So these, you know, these advocacy, you know, people, centers, everything, you know, that we stand for is one thing. But it's all about the awareness because every step that we take is a learning process now, okay? We can't force anything. We have to be patient, but we also have to make good decisions, okay? Those decisions in your mind, the steps that you take, should be focused upon the benefit of the child, okay, bottom line. However, you can do this in the wrong manner, and you can cause major conflict in your family, with yourself. You know, that's the main thing. You know, I mean, you need to be taking care of yourself along the way also if you're the victim, because as a family member, you're also a victim, okay? So, you know, when you impose that on yourself by not knowing what to do, let's look at it that way. It's like, oh, if I only knew this then. If, you know, how much do you hear that? Well, that's why we're here, number one, okay, to discuss this and educate the public right on it, and that's our most important thing, okay? Without NASCA, there's not another organization out there, in my opinion, and I've worked with many. Let me tell you something. Gets down to the nitty-gritty part of it all, okay? And the empathy that's here is major, you know, because we are all survivors. We're a family. But now we are at the point where the education that's coming in, because all the laws are changing right now, we have to stay on top of that, okay? It's the benefit of the survivor now, okay? It's not the benefit of the pedophile or the organization anymore, period. That's not going to happen, you know? That's why times have changed. And I'm very proud to be a part of it in my state and all over the nation. You know, I work with everyone. So, you know, that point that Sheila's bringing up, very, very, and Kim too, let me tell you, that's the most important stuff right there, because that will affect a person forever. Yes, go ahead, Dora.
Hey, John.
I'm sorry, Sheila. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the day that you had to help me make the report against the police officer and what you had to do?
I remember exactly.
Would you like to share that with them? How I was treated?
I can tell you exactly what happened, you know, was that, you know, there were some issues with them, you know, wanting to keep it in-house, okay? You know, I specifically, you know, told them, I said, no, that's not going to happen. You know, you need a deputy out there. And bottom line, I mean, I called and I said, I want a deputy out there for a reason, because when you have higher-ranked officials that have been there for a while, let me tell you something, they are covering stuff up left and right. You know why? Because they know they messed up. And that'll come out. It'll come out eventually. Some of them are even retiring early because they know that the statute of limitations has been changed. Hello. We're not going anywhere. Guess what? We're even stronger than we've ever been. So I called specifically to help Sheila to get a deputy over there, because when deputies take a statement, okay, it's not, you know, the head guy, the head honcho, the captain, the sergeant, someone that's already known about situations, okay? So that'll come out and wash. But when you bring young people in to take a statement for the first time, it makes a huge difference on the way that report was made, how it was made, when it was made and who it was made to, okay? So that way it's coming from a completely what I would call outsider. Even though he's in with the police, he has no idea what's going on initially, and he's writing down everything that needs to be done. Well, if you do it another way, guess what? The report's not going to be the same. It's going to be written down in a whole different way to cover his rear end, all right? And we had enough of that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And to reiterate what John, what you said, it is best to reach out to an organization or someone that has been doing this for some time, because I was clueless of what to do. And John really helped me, and he guided me. And every so often, I still have to call him and say, hey, you know, I've got this. What do I do? And it's very important to have
and
someone
I love
with
that.
Experience.
I just want everybody to know out there that, you know, everyone can always call me. And I'm not perfect as a person, but I know the steps. And I will get involved
right.
in situations to help a certain person. And when they in time need, you know, I know what to do. And that's my thing, is that I want to help people take the right steps. Because if you don't, you can traumatize yourself by triggering everything by making wrong decisions along the way. I know every one of us that I see on this panel has been through that, you know, and been through these steps. And when you look back at it, you know, you have to really be educated on the system that they are presenting, right? We're facing laws every single day, right? Well, when these laws are broken, especially when we have an amendment or a limitation that's been abolished, okay, that gives us a window. That window is so important that people step up, come forward, tell the story, share the stories so we can get educated on it and help someone like Sheila, you know, that is going through the process. It's so important that we do this. Yeah.
Well, I think all that's really good stuff. And, you know, this is a topic that we could talk all night about, probably, especially when it comes to, you know, the different groups that you can report to are, it's particular to really the jurisdiction you're in. Because, you know, if you're in, let's say, I mean, just for the sake of argument, and I'm not saying this is true, but if you're in New Orleans and, you know, the problem happen in, you know, in some other place, you have to go to that other place to report it. You can't report it in New Orleans. So, and then it's dependent on the structure of the other place. Like, let's say Shreveport. Shreveport's the place you have to report it if that's where it occurred, and they have a different set of rules and mechanisms by which survivors of child abuse can even show up, you know. And so, anyway, let me see if there's anybody
and
else
that
would like
to add
to this. Yes, you can.
Can I?
Who's that, John?
I just want to add. Yeah, I just want to add something to that. Drew, get off of that. That whenever you do report something in an area, you have to be very, very careful about doing it. Okay, because even some of the local authorities are involved. Okay, with past history, and it's very, very dangerous, you know, for people to take the wrong steps and go the wrong way. It can actually, you know, rebound, and the repercussions off of it can be serious, you know. So local authorities, you have to be very careful with. That's why, you know, if anything, in my opinion, is going to get reported, okay, you have to do it through the state police, okay, and you have to do it through the right individual through the state police, because there's history there also. You know, because it's going to get reported anyway. No question, right? It's just, how do you do it? You know, who do you go to? So this
well,
is why
may,
in the beginning.
It may get reported and it may not. I mean, I think what Sheila said, the first thing was to try and find a child advocacy center is probably the best way to go. Because child advocacy
mm-hmm.
centers are organizations that have professionals inside of them who are ready to,
right.
They have a comfortable, more comfortable than other places, way
Pleasure.
Of interviewing families and children. And they will
Bye-bye.
Stay with the child, with the case, all the way up and through everything the child needs to face, including court sometimes. So you start with a report, and then you get an investigation going, and you have to have a medical review. So they have that on site. Then they have the interview spaces that are appropriate for children where they're comfortable, and there's a professional person doing the interviewing and so forth. So that's what you look for first. But I'll be telling you what, we have hundreds of them around the country. We need thousands. Okay, there should be one in every county, but unfortunately there aren't. So, all right. Who else would like to share on this topic, or would you like to change topics?
I would.
You guys.
I'd like to share. Victoria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with the child advocacy. Another reason being, too, that, like John was saying about you don't really know who's involved in what. Well, the child advocacy centers a lot of times knows the right people that are tapped into helping children, they'll know whether there's, something, that happened maybe to another kid through, say they're going to court and there's a certain judge that's there or whatever, they kind of, they know what's going on in that area.
Yeah.
For what the different organizations, or maybe they'll handpick, this organization or, this certain person, I think would be the, maybe they might not say it in this way, but the best fit for your kid, or I've got it in with this one or that one or something, But I did want to say when I was a kid, the neighbor was molesting pretty much all the children in the neighborhood, but nothing came out until he raped 3 and 4 year old neighbor girls that lived right next door to him. And then the cops went around the neighborhood knocking on doors and asking kids if they'd been touched, And anyway, they came to my house, and it was my grandma who answered the door, who I lived with and thought was my mom. But anyway, knocked on the door and asked, if either one of us kids had been touched by this guy. And so she called the door, and here's this great big tall policeman, I'm 8 years old. and he says, did Mr. Belt ever touch you in any way or hurt you in any way? And I kind of looked at my grandma, looked up there, and she looked scared and worried and, all at the same time. And she said, if he did anything to you and touch you in your private parts or whatever the hell she called it at the time, you need to tell the policeman, So I just looked at him and went, yeah, he did. And then the policeman left, and my brother, yeah, he did, and the policeman left. And anyway, didn't hear nothing about it. All of a sudden, my grandma says, tomorrow we have to go down to the courthouse and see the judge. And you can't lie to the judge. So I was a lecture all the way down there. So I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. So I had to go in the judge's chambers, And so I'm in there with him. That's it. I mean, there was no preparation whatsoever. And said to me, what did Mr. Bell do to you? And I says, well, he put his hand on my pants and touched my pee-pee, like that. And he goes, I don't understand. Show me. And so, obviously the judge didn't understand. I had to tell him the truth. So, of course, and I felt just like I did at that neighbor's house, when he was doing that to me. And, so thank God things have changed, that there's some kind of an interview process with the kids and, things have really changed.
That's right.
And
things have changed.
Yeah.
We haven't all gotten 100% better, but they're moving in that direction, and it's up to us, really, to push for that change. I just remember the name of the show that we used to do was Institutional Abuse and Enabling. And institutional abuse and enabling can come in many forms, and one of them is that we can try to report that. We actually know of a state group a few years ago now, was found out for taking the reports in the front door of the agency and going out the back door and throwing them in the dumpster. They were never looked at.
Oh, my God.
And this was thousands of cases. Thousands of cases. And it was it supposedly has been fixed now. But just because it was fixed in one place doesn't mean it doesn't go on in others.
No.
And these
DHS
kind of form. These were official forms, So...
Well, I've had people ask me, well, didn't you ever go home and tell your grandparents, or didn't go tell anybody, you know, what that judge, you know, had you do in the judge's chamber. They're like, no, why would I? You know, why would I at the time? You know, I didn't know. You know, and besides, yeah. You know, like the only way I came out and even started talking about being abused as a child was because you, Bill, with, you know, the whole idea of the grooming and everything, because I didn't escape till I was 21 from my biological father's abuse. And, you know, being a little kid and never, you know, you don't know. So I watched that Law and Order SVU and Detective Benson, and I keep having these fantasies. Oh, I wish Olivia Benson would have come to the door when I was 8. Things would have been so much different. You know, she'd have known a judge was, you know, had put me through that in the judge's chambers all by myself. Nobody was with me. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there, that things have changed. And then when I went, when I was 21 and I had escaped from my dad, went to the police station. And the cop said something about, so what happened when you went over to your dad's house? And I said, well, we made love. He says, hold on a minute. He stopped the tape. When you went over to your dad's house, did you want to have sex with him? I go, absolutely not. You know? So everybody's like, when was that? And I said, well, 1983. They said, I wonder if the cop's still around and you'd like to go and thank him, you know, because the awareness wasn't out there at that time. But that cop seemed to have the awareness, you know.
No, he wouldn't have the awareness. He's never been asked to. He's not been trained. I mean, some of it's his fault, some of it's not his fault. But the
no, but just to have stopped
people.
The tape and backed up the tape and asked me if I wanted to do it, you know, because I called it making love, you know. I said, I went over there and we made love, and he stopped the tape and re-erased that, went back and asked me if I wanted to have sex. I said, absolutely not. So it came out differently on the statement. Thanks to him clearing it up. Yeah.
How
old were you when that happened, if I might ask?
The last time, 21.
That's when the police officer stopped the tape?
Yeah.
When
yeah,
you were 21?
Yeah. I was 21 when I escaped from my biological father, yeah.
Wow.
It was from infancy till I was 21 off and on. He kept coming back in my life. I was afraid of him, but I didn't know why, because I had developed MPD and I didn't know it. I was afraid of him. I didn't know why, so I couldn't have. I had no memories, so I couldn't rationalize why I was afraid of him. And then he would come back into my life and start molesting me again.
Wasn't he also at the hospitals that you were going in? He was worked there or something like that. Did something over computers or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was working ahead of all the computer security at the University of Minnesota and had access to everybody's records. And I tried to get him out of that job because he had already, you know, been convicted of what he did to me when I was 17, and because my mother was there and testified against him. Well, not testified, gave her a statement, never went to court. But anyway, he was working there, and he was head of all the computer security, which means he had access to everybody's names, kids, adults, everything, addresses, their psychiatric notes, their medical notes, everything. And I tried to get him, you know, out of there, and what they told me is, well, he's got to know his accuser and your address. I'm like, are you nuts? So they wouldn't do nothing, even though he had a record.
Okay, well, let's, rather than staying on this one particular topic, let's go to some topics that, and more in general, because this is a universal problem that we're talking about. Yeah, it's happened to each of us. It happened to me. You know, I reported my abuse.
Can I just say a couple of things real quick? Sorry,
well,
Bill, go ahead.
You're not going to talk on top of me, are you? I started to say, this has happened to all of us, and in my case, it happened because I revealed to somebody who I didn't realize was himself a predator. and he told somebody else, yeah. He told somebody else. And that means that I had opened myself to the wrong person and had no idea how to correct it. So that's what I was going to say, John. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, what I wanted to do before we moved on was to, there is a national hotline for a lot of people through RAIN. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with RAIN or not, but they have different 800 numbers for different situations, you know. So, like, just like things of sexual assault and harassment, that's one area. But, you know, and then they have domestic violence and dating violence, and then they got other victims of crime, and then they got childhood sex abuse and things of that nature, okay? So these telephone numbers, there's about three, but one of them is 800-799-SAFE, okay? You know, that you can remember, like, off the top of your head. But the main thing is when you do pull this up and look for how to report, you know, these types of situations, they put you directly in touch with an organization that's experienced. They do not say to call the police, you know. So that's a good topic, you know, that we discussed tonight. And I totally agree. At some point, it will get there, but how it gets there is very important.
Actually, we are one of those groups that sometimes gets called, believe it or not. For us, it comes through Child Help because we have a relationship with them. But, you know, we are pretty well known as a group that's, you know, above board and honest and has good answers and so forth and is supportive. So that happens for us, too, and we're delighted when that happens. But 800-6, say it again, 699-SAFE.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 1-800 for that. It's 1-800-799-SAFE.
Oh. 799. Good.
799-SAFE. Yeah. And look, let me give one more here. And that's another hotline number for just an initial call in, which handles the whole thing, okay? It's 1-800-656-4673. That will direct you to all of the areas because, you know, certain people do specialize in certain areas, right? So this is exactly what we're talking about, how to report this specific thing. Well, you know, this is a good step, okay? So, but the other one is 1-800-656-HOPE, okay? That's what that is. 1-800-656-HOPE, and that HOPE is 4673, all right?
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Child Help one is 1-800-4-A-CHILD. So all of these organizations try to you know, have a sort of an easy-to-remember phone number. 1-800-4-A-CHILD is the one that I was saying before. We might be listed under when you call in there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I found out another one today also that's 1-888-PREVENT. And that's
okay.
About prevent childhood sexual abuse.
Okay. And also, too, let me just reiterate that there's different areas. I mean, what if there was trafficking involved, right? Things of that nature. You know, so we do have every type of situation that comes up. I know that NASCA, you know, can help because other things like missing children. Okay, that's another one right there, 1-800-THE-LOST, okay? Things of that nature. So, which does include, in my opinion, getting down, you know, to probably human trafficking, you know, things of that nature. So we do have these contact information available for anyone that's listening out there that you can always look on our contact list on our website. I'm there, Bill's there, Carol's there, all of us are here. And we would be willing to help, you know, in any situation that we can.
Yes, and also know that humantraffickingrescue.org is going to be having a telethon the end of October to bring awareness for human trafficking. It don't mean just children. It can mean any adults or anything that's being pushed into being trafficked.
Yeah. Okay. And we have a lot of contacts.
That's going to be in North Carolina.
All right.
I also want to make sure people knew that RAIN stands for Rape Abuse Incest National Network. That's the abbreviations, and they've been around a long time.
A long time. That's right.
They're way back.
Yeah,
in
thanks.
The day.
Thank you.
That was all that was out there when I was going that I knew of.
Yeah.
And I really like what the bikers do, because they'll go out there and they would even help the kids where they could go into the court system and they'll walk in there helping the kids prepare them and stuff. I like that.
So do I. Big time.
Most of the time,
yeah,
in those situations.
I had the woman, Minnesota Missing Children, at one of my events, and she said that the most highly children that are missing are abducted by the non-custodial parent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one is child runaways, and the third one is by strangers.
Yeah.
You know,
because
we always
add
think,
in that, can I just add in that because of everyone that's here and all the people that come on our show, you know, just, you know, people that off the top of my head, you know, even like Pastor Deborah and Nick Bryant and just, you know, people that work in certain areas. This is the key for the communication part, the awareness part. And that's what NASCA does well. I mean, we have extensive contacts that we can always put people in touch with a certain situation if they're living in a certain area or, you know, what I would call a territory, right? We have those people, you know, that can help you. So if you're out there and you do need help, you know, NASCA is a great place, you know, to ask and find the avenues to go. It's very important that if we're gonna put you in touch with someone, it's going to be somebody that we know, someone that is experienced. To help you in your particular situation. So I'm very proud to be a part of that part.
You know, and if you do yourself the favor of really getting familiar with the NASCA website, because behind mm-hmm. all the menus and links and so forth, there's a plethora of information. This is what John is saying.
Mm-hmm.
We have them. You may need to be directed to them. But also you can self-direct by just making yourself familiar with the structure of the website. You will be surprised, really, really surprised at how much information is there for you and for us. Completely free, right, John? So, hey, can't beat
that.
That's
the whole point
prices,
of it,
right?
You know? Yep. That's right. And,
yeah,
and
I was telling Bill, the other day that I get a lot of parents that I just, you know, because I just meet a lot of people in AA and stuff, a lot of parents that are like, you know, I know that you were abused as a child and I got a little kid. I don't know what to do. What do I tell them? You know, and they say, oh, NASCA, go on there. They've got, you know, all this stuff for kids. They got little videos. They got information for parents. They got how to explain this and that. Really?
Right.
You know, but a lot of times
exactly
you look at the NASCA. Yeah, you look at the NASCA webpage, you know, unless you see up there, you know, for our kids, I think is what it is. And you click on that, and you would not believe. You can just scroll and scroll and find a ton of stuff. And I'm constantly referring people to that because, you know, even if you're not a survivor, adult survivor of child abuse, but, you know, you have the issue of concern for children in any way, shape, or form of them being abused or neglected, there is so much on there that you can inform yourself about. Any questions you have are pretty much on the NASCA webpage.
Can I say something right quick before it ends?
Sure, go ahead.
We need to remember Carol because she had surgery, and she said she needs prayer for her cat, too. She thinks her cat's dying also, so we need prayers
for
her
Kim.
Surgery
also for
and
Kim
all that.
Too. Also for
Kim.
Kim,
too.
Yeah, and also for Penelope's husband, okay? There's a lot there. So we got some family members that are down right now, and we just got to keep them, you know, in our hearts and our prayers and help them out through this time. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the most important point that Victoria is saying, is that, you know, we are a family here, but the main thing is that we support each other when it comes down to it. That's the bottom line, you know, and that shows who NASCA is and what we're about.
All right. Let me make a suggestion. Actually, Victoria asked me about this offline, and I hadn't had a chance yet to get back to her. So let me explain it to everybody. that there is a promotional tool, that's what it's listed under. Under NASCA programs, there's a link that says promotional tools. And when you click on that, among the other things that you can order are business cards with the NASCA logo and your name on it and your phone number and your email. So if you have somebody walk up to you, like this has just been related, you are an abused child, right? So how do I get in touch with blah, blah, blah? You just hand them a card. And you can order these very cheap. They're very cheap. And you can customize them with your personal name, where you're from, your email address, your phone number, and so forth. And also the title that you have at NASCA, if you have one, for example. John would be the what are you?
I've been promoted to communications director. Having been support.
That's right. So the director of communications, you can put that title name there. You could put, ambassador to Minnesota, like for you, Victoria, and so forth. But there are several fields that are editable, and it gives you an opportunity to get something cheap. You can keep 10 of them in your pocket.
Put your state on there. I think it's very important, Bill, like you said, put your state on there. Make it aware that, hey, I live in Louisiana, or I live in Arizona or California. Let them know that that's who you are and that's where you are. And that's a big key.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Sounds very good.
It's a big key for people, for people's support. That's what it is.
Right. So, again, that's under the NASCA program, hold-on menu. And the second to last thing is called promotional tools. And it's going to take you to Vistaprint. We don't make money on any of these things. Vistaprint makes whatever money they make. But we do have a section of Vistaprint that's our quote, shop, unquote. All right, I've got the 60-second warning, so it's time to wrap up. I want to say I really appreciate the fact that we had about 9 people here tonight, which is great.
Yeah, it's very, very good show.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for calling in.
Thank you.
It means a lot.
When you have that many people, it makes for a good show. All right, John.
Good.
Darlene,
good.
Sheila,
thank
Phil,
you all.
Victoria.
Yeah. Right. Kim, don't forget about Kim. Don't forget about Kim. Yep.
Kim is gone.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. All right? Thank you, and good night.
You are forgotten after all that you've done. Radio.